shit from the
You're gonna hate me because I come to your town and we beat your team.
You're now tuned in to one of the realest sports podcasts for Kentucky basketball.
Three in the air, good again!
And football.
The Kentucky defense steps up again.
Just an opinionated Kentucky sports fan podcast.
Maybe that's a Kentucky accent.
With Jay Hayes and JD Hall. Ooh. This is what we do.
Let's go!
Religiously Kentucky.
Big Blue Nation, what is up? I'm your guy, Jay Hayes, and he is...
His voice of reason, JD Hall.
And we are Religiously Kentucky. And before we get into anything, because I want to get into some tidbits, too, before we get into the game with Notre Dame. But thoughts and prayers out to Western Kentucky for the disaster, tornadoes, everywhere, really, for that matter.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it was... the one tornado was on a very long path and through three or four states, and so my thoughts and prayers out to those people dealing with that. A lot of people pitching in. We had the coach of Iowa, you know, this shows you right here how much bigger this is than sports,
right?
You know, and then you got Chris Holtman donating
50
money.
G's.
Yeah, 50 bands.
Yeah,
you know, who is a Kentucky native from Nicholasville. I don't know if you knew
right.
that, but so this is bigger than sports. And then we have the Kentucky men's basketball. I'm not for sure if Stoops and some footballers are going to join in that with telethon mm-hmm. and raising money for that, and relief funds popping up everywhere. I mean, this is it's bigger than sports, people. It really
yes.
is.
Yes, it 100% is bigger than sports. And I'm going to save my rant on that for the dumbest shit.
Right.
Because there was a lot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'm not going to be singling out individual tweets because there were just too many of them.
Right. Right.
But at a time like this, sports is very insignificant.
Right.
When you have a disaster of that type.
Right. And you see the class of these coaches, Ferentz and Holtman, stepping right. up. And you see how classy these guys are.
And, you know, to put in perspective of how bad those tornadoes were, they were registering on the Richter scale. You know, so that tells you the type of impact that they were having on the ground, and to see the devastation that came from that. And I've got family, me and my wife have family out in Western Kentucky, and her cousin, one of the tornadoes went right behind her house. So we're very lucky that our family wasn't impacted, but we know that there are several, you know, many, many more families that were impacted
right.
from this. And as the BBN, as Kentucky fans, as Kentuckians with you, me with family in Kentucky, my roots being in Kentucky, our thoughts just have to be with the family of those people who have lost loved ones, lost their property, lost everything in that terrible disaster, and not worrying about what happened in a basketball game the next day.
Right. Exactly. You know,
so
it is. So our thoughts and prayers go out to everyone impacted. And if you can, and if you're able, you know, think about donating money, water, supplies, anything you can to help out.
And if you can't donate money or supplies, you don't have anything to give, but you're physically able to, and you have the time to, see if you can make a trip down there and help out.
Yeah.
Just cleaning up, because just being there to support them with that type of situation or that type of gesture
right.
is going to mean more to them than what we're saying on here or
right.
what you're tweeting on Twitter or on putting out on Facebook or whatever.
Yeah.
And honestly, may even mean more to them than money or food or anything else, because you're showing them personal support and you're going there to be a part of the effort to rebuild and clean up.
So definitely our thoughts and prayers out to West Kentucky and all those devastated by these storms. And also just some tidbits, Big Blue Nation. We talked about this a while back, early in our startup as Religiously Kentucky. I said, damn, Brad White is, somebody's going to come looking for him.
Mm-hmm.
And now LSU.
It's reported that Brian Kelly wants him.
Yeah.
And that he was down in Baton Rouge at LSU.
Yeah.
Now, whether or not he takes the job is a different story. But if you're Brad White and a program like LSU wants to talk to you, engage your interest in the job, you're dumb to not take the trip down there to have that visit, that interview, that...
Yeah. You want to talk.
You know, trip or whatever.
Yeah.
You want to talk. You want to see what they're about. You want to see... if you're going to fit in with the coaching staff.
Yeah. And see what that money's like. See what that bag's got to offer.
Well, I mean, you already know that the money from LSU is going to be, it's crazy. Like yeah, they have right, so much money to throw around to football. It's ridiculous. But honestly, do we think that he's going to really mesh well with Brian Kelly? Like, come on. I know the dude won a lot of games in Notre Dame.
Right.
He won a lot of games at Cincinnati. But come on. Like, is there is there a bigger douchebag in college football coaching than Brian Kelly?
I would have to pause for quite a while and think
like
about
it's,
that.
Because you see some of the things that he said.
Yeah. You're right. He's a certified douche, for real.
And you see, the stuff with the video guy that he forced to go up on the scaffolding during heavy winds, which ended up costing that kid his life. And then you see his halftime speech at the LSU basketball game, and he starts throwing on this thick, fake Southern accent.
Right.
That was as bad as Nicholas.
Yes.
Con Air.
Yeah.
School is very important. Your mom is right.
I don't know.
I'm right with you.
Me personally, I couldn't go down there and look Brian Kelly in the eye and take anything he said seriously.
Right. And money changes people's thoughts.
It can. But I think I did read an update about it where personal relationships and how he's going to fit in are going to play a huge role in whether or not he would ultimately take that job.
Right.
So I think he fits really well with Stoops personality wise and football, like philosophy wise and defense wise, about what they want to do. So I think that relationship works.
Yeah. And Brad White is staying with us. But moving right along, more transfers, more transfers hitting the portal. Marquise Bembry,
Katie McDaniel, Mo Douglas and McDaniel were, I think, a little surprising to some people, maybe not to people that are in the know, but guys like us that are just fans, we have no inside information.
Right.
I think those two were kind of surprising because I think we thought they were going to get a pretty big uptick in on-field snaps next year.
Yeah.
And we saw in the last game or so that KD McDaniel, he did some good things out there.
Yeah.
And with AGM probably maybe being gone and Corker, we know is definitely gone. Devontae Robinson's gone. We're losing a lot from that back end.
Yeah.
So you've got, spots there for playing time if you were Douglas. So, but it is what it is. I don't worry too much about the portal, if I'm being perfectly honest. As long as it's not guys, like say it was Darian Kennard last year, deciding to transfer, something like that. It's a pretty big piece of what you're trying and wanting to do. Unless it's somebody like that, like if it was JJ Weaver, I'd be concerned. If it was, something like that, one of the tight ends, Keaton Upshaw, if he or Cummings, if one of them entered the portal, that would surprise me and I'd be concerned about that. But when you see guys like Mo Douglas and Katie McDaniel who haven't really had a chance to play yet because of the guys in front of them. And then you see some of the guys that are coming in with McDaniel, you got Fearby and you got Wade both coming in who are pretty highly ranked recruits. You could kind of maybe see why he thought, well, maybe I should move on and find another place. I don't know if we've got anybody committed right now that's a safety. I don't have the recruiting class up here with me. I don't think so.
I'm not for sure.
It's a little surprising that Mo Douglas would enter the portal. But it is. But again, it is what it is. It's nothing for fans to really get that worked up about because we're most likely going to bring somebody back.
Well, I'm sure they have these conversations too with coaches saying, hey, well, we're going after this guy or this guy. And
I mean,
you're going to have to put in more work.
And you look at Kentucky's class right now, we're ranked number 12 in the country the night before signing day.
Right.
Number 4 in the SEC.
You concerned about Goodwin?
I think you've got to have a little bit of concern if you're a Kentucky fan. But until signing day, I don't know if it's really – there's a lot of smoke, but that doesn't necessarily mean there's fire there, right? So he's got a really good relationship with Vince Merrill, and I think that's going to play a big part in whether or not he ultimately stays committed to Kentucky. But again – if he ends up flipping to Michigan State, like some people think might happen, wish the kid good luck. Nobody needs to go out and crush him. Wish him good luck. And, you know, who knows, maybe someday down the road, he comes back. You know, look, Wandale Robinson did the same thing. He committed to Kentucky, flipped to Nebraska, came back 2 years later. So it doesn't necessarily mean that if he goes to Michigan State or if he goes somewhere else, that he's not ultimately going to end up at Kentucky. But even so, the recruiting class, yes, he's the best player in the class. There's no argument there from that.
Hands down, right.
And it would leave a pretty significant hole on your offensive line. But the recruiting class overall is pretty deep.
Yeah.
So we're still going to have a pretty decent recruiting class, even if he doesn't end up staying committed. So yeah. I see, you know, some of our fans are already freaking out
the on ass Twitter has fallen
about
out.
It. And by the time this goes up, it's already going to be past signing day. So it's going to be
right.
You know,
right. The ass has fallen out.
Like, we're talking about something that's going to happen before our listeners actually listen to this.
Right. Right.
So, but wish the kid good luck and wherever he ends up. Hopefully it's at Kentucky.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we are going to need at least a tackle, right?
Yeah.
Because we're losing Kennard for sure.
Yeah.
Rosenthal's maybe 50-50 about whether or not he comes back. So if you lose both of them, you probably need two tackles at least. And they did just extend an offer to a kid out of California. I think his dad was a player for the Bills, another offensive tackle. So, but that, if you read Vince Merrill's tweet, has nothing to do with Keontae Goodwin.
Yeah.
They just know that they're going to need more bodies on the offensive line. And this is a kid that's not signing until February. So you get in now, you offer him, you get him in for an official visit, and you go from there, because it doesn't hurt to add another brick to that big blue wall.
Doesn't hurt. So, yeah, just the tidbits, some things going on around the University of Kentucky. Now, I want to get into the game that was Kentucky versus Notre mm-hmm. Dame and the meltdown with that.
From the fan base?
Yeah, it was bananas. I mean, of course, nobody likes losing. And that is a bad loss. Kentucky falling to 21.
Which?
It was to be expected.
I think that's a bit extreme. 11 spots.
Yeah, but it's Kentucky.
It's Kentucky. Kentucky gets treated differently after a loss than a lot of other teams do.
Right, right. To me, I thought 21 was great because being Kentucky, I figured they would just knock us out of the top 25, period, because it is Kentucky, because that's how they do us.
I was thinking it was probably going to be a, you know, 6 or 7 spot drop. That was my thought. So 16, 17, maybe.
Right.
So 21, I mean, it's not that far off, but still that's a lot for one loss in your first true road game. And if you look at the top 20 on the road against top 100 teams, they were 8-9 this year. So why is it that Kentucky goes on the road to a top 60 team, loses on the road, but yet gets penalized more than these other teams that are going on the road and playing these top 100 teams, where the top 20 has a losing record on the road in those games?
No respect.
Right? No respect. So it's probably a little bit of a byproduct of the schedule that they just played at home, right?
Right. Which Mike Bray took shots at in his post-game comments.
Right. Mike Bray is a Coach K guy, so, I mean, it doesn't surprise me that he was kind of douchey.
Right. Oh, goofball.
But the one stat that sticks out for me for that game was the three-point shooting.
Right.
They were 2-19.
Right. And okay. That's you're not going to win like that. But let me ask you this.
No.
Were we out-coached?
No.
Because we talked about it.
The reason I say that.
We talked about it.
I wish that what we were talking about Sunday when we were doing this.
Right.
I wish we wouldn't have had the technical difficulties that we had.
Yeah.
To where that entire conversation was just shit and gone. Because in a game where Kentucky shot 2-for-19 from three.
Right.
Where your best shooters were 2-for-13 from three. When we're talking about Grady, Mintz, and Ty-Ty. And you lose that game by 2 points, because I'm not counting that last dunk, because that does, to me, doesn't really count in the score.
Right.
Right. Yes, I know the final score was 66-62 or whatever it was.
4 points.
And it was a 4-point spread. But in reality, it was a 2-point game. It was a 2-point loss.
Yeah.
And it's a 2-point game because the coach recognized they can't stop Oscar. We're going to go to Oscar as much as we can and get him as many touches and as many shots as we can.
Right.
Until they stop it. and they never stopped it. He finished 11-14, had, what, 27 points? The only thing they stopped on Oscar was the rebounding, because if you watch the game, they double-teamed him or triple-teamed him on every single defensive rebound. They went and they found Oscar, and they made sure he was not the one that was going to get a rebound on the offensive end. And then on the defensive end, Notre Dame could have cared less about going after an offensive rebound.
Right.
So they just threw everybody back to protect against transition. But to my point, like, Coach Cal found something that worked.
Yeah.
And he wanted to keep going and going. And you keep going. When you find something that's working on a basketball court and something else isn't, i.e. your three-point shooting, yes, you keep shooting those shots if they're open, which Grady, Mintz, and Ty had a lot of really good looks in that game.
Yeah.
And I see people saying they didn't get any good looks. Watch the game again.
They had some good looks.
Because they had some... I would say 12 out of the 13 were good looks, and the one that wasn't happened to be the one that Grady made.
Right.
Because we had one possession down there where I think Mintz and Grady missed three or four threes, you know, and they were wide open. So don't tell me they didn't get any good looks. Okay. So you go and with what's working, and the meltdown for this game actually started after the Southern game.
Yeah.
When there was a graphic tweeted out about the three-point shot rate for Kentucky this year being below 28%. Okay. Yes. Overall season number was at that percentage going into that game. We're acknowledging that, right?
Yeah.
But there has to be more context to those tweets other than just pointing out this is where we're at right now, right? So I did some number crunching after that tweet. And the last four games, which is going to be North Florida, Central Michigan, Southern, and Notre Dame. Like 35% of our threes, or 35% of our shots are threes the last four games. The overall season number is at about 28%, 29% right now. But it's being drastically brought down by two games. The Duke game and the Mount St. Mary's game. Because in those games, they shot a combined 19% of their shots from three-point land.
Right.
So you take out those two games, and Kentucky on the season is shooting 32-33% of their shots from three. What did I tell you before the season I wanted to see Kentucky shoot game to game from three? 32-35%.
Yeah.
And in the last four games, they're 32%, 36%, 35%, and 36%. So the trend for Kentucky is not this 28% number that old Matty Bangs is putting out there. The trend for this offense and for this team is 35-36% of their shots are from three. And a good chunk of those shots are coming from your shooters. Dante Allen, Grady, Mintz, and Ty. Those are the ones that are shooting your shots. They're also the ones that are missing your shots and the reason you're shooting well below 30% in the last four games. So I ask you, if we're shooting 27% from three in the last four games and 36% of our shots are from three the last four games, should we be shooting more threes? Or should we wait until our shooters get back into a rhythm of making threes or get into a rhythm of making threes before they start saying, okay, now let's shoot more threes. Let's start making the good shots that we're getting now,
right,
before we start bitching about the number of shots that we're taking.
Right, because you want to go to what's working. The mid-range,
right.
Dumping down to Oscar, those things are working. Yep.
And you see people complaining about Keon taking long twos. I want my players taking shots they're comfortable taking.
Right.
If it's a three-pointer, if it's a long two, if it's a 15-footer, if it's a little hook shot, floater, I want my players taking the shots that they're comfortable taking.
Right. Me too.
And if Keon's not comfortable and it's in his mind when he's behind the three-point line,
right,
but he shoots it in rhythm when he takes a step inside that three-point line, take a step inside the three-point line and take that shot.
Right.
Because I believe he's shooting like 43% on the year on his mid-range long twos.
Yeah.
He's at like 25% on the year from three, and he's at like 62% on the year for at the basket. So it tells me I want Keon Brooks taking two-point shots for the most part. Now, in that Notre Dame game, we saw Toppin take a three on like the secondary break as the trail man.
Yeah, I like that shot.
That's a great shot for guys like Toppin and Brooks to take because you're getting the ball in rhythm and you're stepping into your shot.
Yep.
The best shot for a shooter to take is off what? An offensive rebound that gets kicked back out to the guard, because then they can catch it, step into it, and shoot. It's exactly the same thing like when you're the trail guy on the fast break who gets that ball dumped back out to him for a three-point shot. I like that shot. I'm okay with Toppin and Brooks taking one or two threes a game. because they have to. And we talked about this before the season. Those guys have to shoot about 30% from three, so that you have to respect that. They're both below that right now.
Right.
So they don't. Nobody has to really respect them shooting that shot. I thought Wheeler took a couple of bad shots.
Yeah.
Because they were sagging off of him and daring him to shoot the ball. But as a shooter, it's always hand down, man down, right? If your guy that's defending you has his hands down, you're open because you can get that ball up and shoot it before they're able to get their hands back up and defend it. So Bryce Hopkins, he took one that was a pretty open three, I think, from a corner, and he took another one hand down, man down. I'm okay with those. I'm good with those because as a shooter, you shoot, you know, and one of the things they're going to want Bryce Hopkins to do at that position that he's going to play going forward in his career is they're going to want him to shoot. They're going to want him to be able to make those shots. So I'm okay with Hopkins taking those threes. So there really wasn't a whole lot as far as the 3-point shots in the Notre Dame game that I was upset about the shot that was taken.
Let me maybe ask you
one,
this.
Maybe one or two of them, but
For overall, I
really wasn't upset with the shots that they took.
Did you feel like watching this game? Did you feel like, and this comes into the coaching aspect of it, that Notre Dame was better prepared than we were? Did you feel like that watching this game? I mean, because
I don't think so.
They had a plan for rebounding. They out rebounded us by five.
Right, but what are you gonna, if they're double teaming Oscar on all the rebounds, and you know you still got to protect for defense, so you can't send all five guys to the board, right? So you got to keep a couple of guys back to at least have somebody back if they get the rebound and kick it out. You got to have somebody back there to defend. So you can't send all five guys down there. So you're at most going to have three guys going against maybe four for them rebounding, and they're double teaming Oscar. There's not much that you can do to fight that. Like they're going all in on that defensive end, defensive rebounding. I think, you know, there was Duke or Notre Dame went on that 11-1 run, which flipped it from a 5-point lead to a 5-point deficit for Kentucky. And it was more about the defensive breakdowns than anything else.
Yeah. A lot of layups, a lot of just wide open layups.
And again, you know, people are going to say, well, Cal's got to coach it better. Okay. Once the players are out there playing, you can't tell them, okay, this is what you got to do. You know,
right.
Don't tell me that Cal's not coaching these guys in practice about what they should do.
Right. Got to execute on the court. Right.
On the open three, if you go back and watch it, and David Sisk tweeted out this play specifically,
yeah.
Go back and watch it. There was a switch, and then Ty and Oscar were switching back because Ty was on Oscar's guy. There was no need for Keon Brooks to leave his dude and switch again with Ty, which ultimately caused them to bump into each other and leave his guy open at the top of the key for the three. That went from a 5-point game to a 2-point game. So that's not on Coach Cal.
Well, you got to learn how to switch and when not to switch.
That's on Keon Brooks.
Right.
That's on Keon Brooks.
And he's been there 3 years.
Not doing what he was supposed to do.
You know what I'm saying?
Right. I know what you're saying. You know, that comes to him most likely overthinking the situation instead of just playing the situation out. Because if you go back and look, Oscar and Ty had their guys defended, and there was no need for Keon Brooks to come down and get into that area, which ultimately caused
discipline.
The problem.
We heard
because
Cal say
look, it. And if you look at it, if you look at Ty after he hit that shot, he was like what the hell was going? Like why? Yeah. Like why were you down there?
Right.
And then you had the situation.
You think that's Brooks not trusting his teammates?
Maybe.
A little bit of
because
that.
Because, again, like, yes, we got a lot of experience and we got some great guys like Ty, but none of these guys have played together.
Right.
Right. So it could be communication, you know, trust, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
And then you have a situation with Wheeler on the baseline out of bounds. His dude was in the corner. He was too high. That's on him. That's basketball 101, that you never let the guy you're guarding get out of your peripheral vision.
Right.
If you can't see him without looking at him, you're out of position. So he was a step too high to let that dude get behind him because he had to look at him, and he turned his head back towards the bucket, and the guy cut behind him, right behind him.
Yeah, twice that happened.
Now, it didn't happen to him twice.
The inbounds play.
The other one was a screen. Was a switching situation.
Yep.
They didn't switch like they were supposed to. So again, you're talking about communication, trust, whatever. Don't tell me that Cal didn't know about that inbounds play that Mike Bray was going to run.
Right.
I guarantee he knew Mike Bray runs that play, and they had talked about how they were going to defend that play. He's not a Hall of Fame coach because he just rolls the ball out there and doesn't know what the fuck he's doing.
Right.
Right. I mean, there are other coaches in the country that are rolling the ball out there, and we see the results that are happening because of it.
Right.
But
Dan was okay.
Like, you got three situations where if you just do what you're supposed to do, they don't have 7 points on the board.
Right.
If you just shoot your season average of 33%, 32% coming into that game, you win the game.
Right.
If you shoot 25%, which was your average in the three games previous to that, you win the game.
Right. Do we have makers or what? We heard Cal say we got makers. I believe
thought we did.
I heard Keon.
We thought we did.
Well, I heard Keon in post game say, "Man, I watched these guys early in the morning, right, late at night, getting those shots up, hitting those shots. I don't know why they're not falling in the game. They're just not."
And you know, I see all these people talking about the offensive philosophy, which to me is a bullshit gripe.
Right.
For you to just bitch about the coach.
I agree on that.
Because, again, if you look at the shots that we're getting at three, they're good shots by our shooters, and they're just not going down. I don't think that's going to continue for the whole year.
No.
I think Grady, Mintz, Ty, and when Allen gets a shot, they're all going to end the season right around 40% shooting. I think that's what's going to happen. A little above, a little below. It's going to be right around 40%.
Gorgeous.
I mean, right now, Grady's at 40%. I think Ty's at like 37. So they're not far off. But the problem is all their misses have come in the last four games.
Yeah.
So it makes things look a lot worse.
Well, a lot of people were screaming, where was Dante Allen? Why didn't he play in this game? And, you know, yeah, I just kind of shook my head. You know, he's been missing a lot here lately, too. And he is a liability on the defensive side of the ball.
One of the things that he needs to do to get playing time is he has to make shots. And he hasn't made shots. I mean, plain and simply, shooting 23%, I think, from three this year.
Right. And I'm not, like, down on the kid, but he's not good on defense.
And you look at some of the defensive breakdowns that we had, you think Dante would have fixed those issues?
No.
I don't, because I see him get lost in just playing man-to-man defense.
Right.
Now, when you're asking him to switch and do all this other stuff, we already had those breakdowns with Keon and Xavier and that stuff. I don't think it would have been any better or made a difference with Dante Allen. Now, is it possible he could have come in and made a shot? Absolutely, it's possible. But I think our best offensive roster right now, and it was evident in that game, and it's been evident throughout the season, because shout out to Hoops Insight for taking a lot more time than I would ever do to do it. They're about 8% better than their season average when they have Grady, Mintz, Ty, Brooks, and Oscar on the floor together. That's been their best offensive team, their best offensive roster, whatever you want to call it.
Lineup.
That was the word I was looking for. Yeah. So I think those are the guys that you've got to play
the
most. And then if Oscar gets him in foul trouble, I don't know if you necessarily need to bring in Damian Collins or not. Or if you want to go offensive, you want to bring in a guy like Bryce Hopkins, who has an offensive game. We've seen what he can do off the dribble and in the paint. So maybe bring in Bryce Hopkins. Maybe bring in Jacob Toppin for the energy and the athleticism to replace Oscar. You know, and Toppin's still 6'9". I'd say he's probably closer to 6'10", but listed at 6'9". But that way you don't sacrifice your shooting. And you've probably got to have two shooters out there at all times with Xavier Wheeler. You're going to have Grady and Mintz, Grady and Ty and Mintz, something like that roster, that lineup out there with him at all times, because you can't have him with Bryce Hopkins and maybe Ty or Mintz or Grady, and then Keon and Oscar or Collins or somebody like that.
Right. And let me add this in there too. It's early December. Mm-hmm. So like we were talking
Cal's coming up. Like I know people are going to say, well, you guys are just pumping sunshine. You guys are just,
that's right.
No, I mean,
I am.
We probably are one of the more
optimistic,
positive podcasts out there.
But we call it how we see it as well. I mean,
there's been an issue with the 3-point shooting. We're not denying that, But it's not because of the way they're running the offense. It's because they're missing the shots.
Right.
Like, people are saying this offense is designed to get long twos. Are you fucking kidding me? Like,
wow.
The players that are taking the long twos are the players you want taking those because they feel comfortable taking them.
Right.
You know, Ty's got an amazing mid-range game.
Yeah.
If he's not open for three and he can get a two dribble pull-up, I want him taking that shot.
Right.
You know, Keon is really comfortable at that 18-foot jumper.
Yeah, and I, you know, and it doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me when I see him take that shot. I'm like, cool. You know.
Now, will it bother me if my shooter like Ty or Grady or Mintz takes a shot with their toe on the 3-point line? Yes, that's going to bother me because move their foot back 6 inches.
Right. Be aware of where you are. Right.
Right. Those shots by those players bother me, but a shot by a guy like Brooks, who is very comfortable taking that 15-18-foot jumper
right
at that spot, doesn't bother me. It bothers me if he starts chucking up a 4 or 5 threes, because that's not what you want Keon Brooks doing.
Unless he hits, and then you're like, hell yeah.
It's like go back to the Florida game in 2020,
yeah,
where they came back from 18 down. A big reason why they came back is because Keon was 3 for 3 from three with 9 points.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm sitting here at work watching the game. I'm like, no, yes, no, yes. Like that was my feeling at that game. No, I don't want it. Then it goes in. Yes. Thanks. Good shot. Great shot. So even Oscar has shown that he's pretty comfortable now taking that 12 to 15 foot jumper.
Yeah.
You know, from the elbow, and he's hit that at a pretty good clip. So it's not like they're taking bad shots.
Right.
The reason that people are bitching is because they think they should be taking more threes because they're not making threes right now.
Right.
Which to me it's not a logical way of thinking.
Right. I like
if you're not making threes, you don't want to take more threes.
Right. I like the 20 to 25 range, but I'm hearing what you're saying and I like that. And when you're playing, you go with what works.
Right.
So I get that. And I'm not, and I don't like depending on the three. We see what that does during tournament time.
We saw what that meant this weekend with the team. Villanova took 54 shots in their game against Baylor. They made 12 of them. 27 of their 54 shot attempts were from three.
Yeah.
And I think they made 6. There's a reason why they scored 36 points in that game.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a double look at that score. I was like, huh?
When you're a team that's that dependent on the three, and that shot is not falling,
it will burn your ass.
And you can't do anything else. We saw it with Villanova this weekend. We saw it with Alabama in the tournament. We see it every year with 3-point shooting teams.
Yep.
I want my team to be able to score at all three levels of the floor. At the basket, at the mid-range, and at three.
Right.
You have to defend the entire floor then. You can't just give up that 12-foot jumper if the guys that you got that you're playing against can make that 12-foot jumper.
Right. And in the Notre Dame game, the three was just not falling. Kentucky falls to Notre Dame 66,
well, let's,
66 to let's 62, and now they're 7-2 overall. 7-2, like it's a horrible fucking thing.
I picked Kentucky to win that game 77-66.
I can't remember what mine was, but it was
it was a lot worse than that.
Yeah, I had a crazy. You were
like 18 or 20 points. Yeah.
And they should have.
I picked Kentucky to win that game 77-66, right? We were 2 of 19 from 3. If we hit 3 more shots and we're at that 32-33%, there's 9 more points.
Yeah.
And we're at 71-66.
Yeah. To be honest with you, they should have blown this team out.
They should have, but when you play against a good coach, because let's not forget, Mike Bray is a pretty good coach.
He's a goofball, but he's a decent coach.
He's a decent coach. He's going to make sure that we're not going to get those easy. We're not going to get those easy baskets in transition,
right?
Because he's going to send all of his guys back to defend that. And when you're not getting those buckets in transition, that slows the pace of the game down.
Right.
So it lessens the amount of shots that you get in the game. Cause I think we took 55 shots in that game.
Something like that.
So when the pace of the game is slowed down, the number of possessions are slowed are smaller. The number of shots are smaller. And 20 of your 55 shots, 19 of your 55 shots from three, but you only make two of them. That's where the issue was.
Right.
Plain and simple.
Yeah. So
it's not rocket science to figure out why Kentucky lost that game.
Right. Two of 19. But yeah, that's the story. Kentucky sitting now at 7-2 overall. And like, that's a bad, horrible thing. I don't
get that.
Yeah, right. There was the meltdown, but you know,
fire cow.
Yeah, yeah, you know how it goes. And now we have Ohio State coming up this Saturday at 5 p.m. in Vegas. Ohio State, great matchup. What do you think about this game? I'm gonna put a bold prediction out there.
It's gonna be a tough game. EJ Liddell is a great player. Mm. They have another guy in the middle that's pretty good as well. So they got a couple of big guys that are pretty good.
Yeah.
But I don't think they're going to play the same way that Notre Dame played, where they send everybody back to protect against the transition.
Right.
And forget about the defensive rebounding. So I think we'll probably get a few more opportunities in the fast break. And who knows if they're going to defend Wheeler the same way. Because if they sag off Wheeler, like Notre Dame did, and dare him to shoot the ball, is he going to take the bait? Or is he going to listen to the coaches and not take those shots that they're daring him to take?
Right.
Now, and up until the Notre Dame game, Wheeler had been pretty good on those 12- to 15-foot jumpers too.
Yeah.
He just missed everything in the Notre Dame game.
Yeah.
So,
I think we'll see a different Severe Wheeler.
I hope so, because we need Wheeler to be the guy setting the table for our shooters, yeah, to get them those open shots. Yeah,
facilitate.
You know, I like Ty running the point.
Yeah.
But I really like Ty off the ball.
Yep.
To be a playmaker that way. But like I said, the most efficient offensive lineup has been Ty, Grady, Mintz, Brooks, and Oscar.
Yeah. Right.
So those guys, you're going to have Ty run to the point. And let's not forget, the team with Tyrese Maxey, Quickly, Richards, Hagans, lost two straight games to Utah and Ohio State.
Yep.
To fall to, I think it was 7-3. How'd that team finish the season? How'd that team work out? Because that was a team that was trending up.
Yeah.
At the end of the year.
Yeah.
They won the SEC by a full three games.
Yeah.
They finished 25-6 on the year. And probably were pretty much a lock to be a two seed in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, two or three.
So these early December, these December losses are not really a barometer necessarily for how this season's going to go. Because the team struggled.
Yeah.
In those games leading up to that Ohio State loss, because that was the second loss in the back-to-back. That team had struggled, but they found their footing. They found their niche. They found what they needed to do. And if you take out the implosion to Tennessee, they win the SEC by four games, 26-5. And like we talked on Sunday when we tried to record this team gives me not the 1920 team. It does, you know, I'm not comparing this team to that team. It reminds me more of the Brandon Knight team.
I remember you saying
because
that.
Ty is pretty similar to Knight in how he plays the game. We have a similar makeup as far as guys on the floor. Oscar's obviously better than Harrelson in the paint. we don't really have a the one guy we don't have on this team is a Terrence Jones type at the four. But the one thing that team could not do is they could not win close games, and they could not win close games on the road the entire season. And that was back in my miserable UK fan days, before I decided to not put so much into a basketball game. And if you go back and look at my Facebook posts, I did some pretty big ranting in 2010, 2011 for those games that they were losing, because they were games that they should not have lost.
Right.
And they just didn't know how to close out those games and win those games on the road.
Yeah.
But they figured it out, didn't they?
Yeah.
Sure, because they ended up winning the SEC tournament. They ended up making a run to the Final Four. You know, so Brandon Knight with that dagger over Aaron Kraft to beat the number one overall seed in the Sweet 16. Yeah. You know, those were shots that he would not have made earlier in the season. You know, the layup against Princeton in the first round. You know, we forget that they almost lost to Princeton in the first round. But he got that layup to give him the win. Those were plays that they would not have made earlier in the season.
Right.
When they were learning each other, when they were learning how to play the game, when they were learning how to win those games. Now, I get it. We've got guys like Mintz, Grady, Wheeler, Oscar, Keon, all these guys have experience. They don't have experience together, for one. And Grady is on record of saying he had to get used to the speed of the game coming in. So we know he's still getting used to that. So it's not time for the fan base to lose their shit like they have.
Yeah.
It's still early in the season.
Yeah.
So things are going to get better. These shots that they're missing, 6 out of 20, you know, 7 for 26, 6 for 25. Those shots that they got in those games that they missed were good shots. You know, think about just the one shot in the Notre Dame game when the game was tied at 62, Grady from the corner, like 80% down, it somehow comes out.
Yeah.
And he misses that shot. We've been up 3 with about a minute to go after that, by the time they get possession and get down the floor. Yeah. Like that changes things, because then even then it was 64. It would have been 64-65, and they would have had to foul.
Yeah.
Because we would have had possession and they'd have been down, and we could have held the ball to the end of the game.
Right.
So it changes the outcome. One shot that should have gone in and looked like it was going in would have changed the entire outcome of that game.
Yeah.
So
Kentucky, Ohio State, you know, I've got Kentucky, of course. I think it'll be a good game, but I think Kentucky pulls away.
Kentucky can win.
Yeah.
I think it's a game Kentucky can win. We just need our backcourt to play a little better. I mean, playing simple. We're a backcourt guard dominated team, a perimeter dominated team. Yeah. And we talked about this after the Duke game. If your guards and your perimeter players don't play great, and that's what's your team is built on and centered around, what you're going to struggle.
Yeah.
If you don't have somebody else step up and make shots. So we're going to be okay.
We're going to be okay.
We say all this stuff. We talked about this game and the Ohio State game to say it's going to be okay. We're going to be okay.
In the words of Aaron Rodgers, relax.
Exactly.
Relax. Oh, man. The meltdown.
Or in the words of the Harrison, I can't remember which one it was. It's going to be a great story.
Yeah. And just the word meltdown brings us to this next segment.
Hey, man, you know you're a piece of shit, right? You know, right? Right? Come on. Yeah, you know. You know, right? Yeah. Yeah, you know.
You know what time it is. The dumbest shit from Twitter this week. What you got, JD?
Yeah, let me get in here into our messages and let me see what we got here. Let's see. Maybe we'll go with the... Now, we didn't talk about this. Well, we'll start with the Kentucky Network, okay? Tweeting out the picture of Devin Askew and what Chris Beard said about him and his stats and saying, sorry, not sorry. I retweeted that because members of our fan base have got to move on and get over the fact that Devin Askew, one, transferred, two, and two, is struggling. Stop it. He's a kid. Leave him alone. There's no reason for our fan base to be tweeting out stuff about how Devin Askew is doing this year. I get that Chris Beard, that was a stupid statement on his part to put that pressure on Devin Askew to be one of the greatest ever.
Right.
I get that. But it's still no reason to continually put stuff out there about Devin Askew and how he's doing at Texas. Zero. There's no room for it. Leave him alone. Maybe if members of this fan base will leave the kid alone, it could get out of his head and he can start playing basketball like he was capable of playing.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if you don't think the stuff that he saw from our fans last year on Twitter and what he's seeing from people still talking about him this year is affecting him in his head, you've got to be out your mind to think that this stuff isn't going to bother him. And don't sit there and come back and say, well, he's not strong enough, he's weak, he's mentally weak. It has nothing to do with it, because now you start questioning everything you're doing on the floor. Am I working hard enough? Am I doing the right thing? Am I practicing right? Am I whatever? Am I putting in enough time? You start questioning everything about what you're doing as a player, which then affects everything that you're going to do on the floor as a player. Leave the kid alone. Let him get on with his life. Let him move on at Texas. I hope the kid comes out and has a tremendous career.
I mean, if you're a college basketball fan, no matter if you're just a fan of Kentucky or not, like I am, you still root for the kid to show out.
Right.
You still want the kid to do good. Like, people don't get that. I don't know why. It's something else. But this brings us to the next. I mentioned Meltdown. Tim Brandstetter of Wildcat mm-hmm. Sports Talk. Hashtag bring back Rick. Tired of Calipari. The meltdown.
Rick Pitino is now in
the meltdown begin.
Paraphrasing Rick Pitino himself, Rick Pitino is not walking through those doors.
Right.
The University of Kentucky, with all the stain and all the shit that's on Rick Pitino, is not bringing that man back to coach.
Right. And I like Pitino as a coach.
He's phenomenal as a coach. But there's too much shit and there's too much stink associated with his name as a head coach to bring him back to the University of Kentucky.
Right.
And the fact that he flipped the bird to the fans walking off the court.
Right.
He's not coming back to the University of Kentucky, and people can stop asking for them to bring Rick back.
Yeah, Cal is not a good coach. I'm guessing.
If you think you can bring back Rick Pitino and catch lightning in a bottle for a second time, it's really hard to do.
My suggestion is get you an Iona hoodie, Tim.
Right. And he's not coming back to Kentucky.
Of the Gales. No,
he may end up at another Power 5 conference, at another Power 5 school or whatever, or a different school than Iona, but it's not going to be Kentucky. I can guarantee you that.
It's Iona, and that's it. Rick's done.
So, and you're talking about a dude that's, what, 67 years old?
He's pushing 70, yeah.
So, come on. Guy's going to end up dying on the freaking sidelines. If you look at him when he was at Louisville, looked like he was dead on the sidelines. Look, it was
he could have He could have played a vampire. He definitely could have played a vampire.
Without putting any makeup on.
Right. Come on, Tim.
Yeah.
That's crazy. What do you got next?
We'll go with at Clearer. Now, this isn't her. So she retweeted a tweet. So you've watched 150 plus games over 4 to 5 years and not had any fun doing it. Just stop watching them.
Facts.
And that was in response to fake Barney KSR trying to remember the last time Kentucky basketball was fun. Genuinely struggling to answer. Has it really been 4 or 5 years?
Fuck your life, bing bong.
And Kentucky Kid replied to Claire, you realize how depressing that is. Kentucky basketball, something I've loved since a little kid, is so unwatchable and pathetic that your solution is that I just stop watching. Blind optimism from people like you is hurting this program. I'm with fake Barney. This isn't fun. What we think as fans have no bearing on what the program does, what the players do, what the coach does. Has nothing to do with it.
Right. The fun part is rooting for your team.
If college basketball upsets you to that point, why are you even watching?
Right.
If there's anything in your life that upsets you this much, why do you continue to do it?
No.
Or do you get out of that situation and stop bringing that negativity into your life?
Exactly.
If it pisses you off that much, stop watching.
Right.
And it's not about blind optimism, because I had a whole lot of help of fun watching the IQ Maxi team play that year. I had a hell of a lot of fun watching Monk and Fox play.
Yeah, hell yeah.
I had a lot of fun watching PJ Washington and Tyler Hero and that team play. So if you've watched all these games since 2015 and you haven't had any fun watching them, I think that's a you problem.
Yeah.
It's not a program problem. It's not a team problem. It's not a coach problem. It's a you problem.
That's fact.
Get your priorities straight and find something else to do with your life.
I'm Jay Hayes, and I approve this message by J.D. Hunt.
I'm tired of it.
You're speaking facts, bro.
I don't cuss a whole lot on this, but when I get fired up, you got to bring in the beefs.
Right, right.
So,
hey, run.
Because I'm tired of it.
Yeah, it's nuts.
Supporting your team is not about blind optimism.
Right. I have fun rooting for my team.
Last season, that team didn't need us bitching about them on Twitter.
Right.
That team needed us supporting them.
Yeah, rooting for them.
As much as we could and rooting for them.
Right.
Because it was a bad and a hard situation for everybody.
It was hard to watch. And you know what I was doing on Twitter? I was still making my bold predictions. I was still rooting for my team.
Exactly.
Because that is the fun part. That's the fun part about it. It's rooting for your team.
Was last season depressing? Yes, it was depressing.
It's hard to watch.
But you know what? I watched every damn game that I could watch.
Yeah. How depressing. So we're saying it's depressing as fans, but how depressing do you think it was for players? How much do you think those players needed us to uplift them?
Exactly. Because if you think these games matter more to you as a fan than they matter to Coach Cal as the coach of that of those teams, or the players that are actually going out there on the floor and doing something that you could not do.
Right. Fuck Addy.
On your best fucking day, you couldn't do anything that these guys are doing on the floor. You don't think that these losses hurt them more than they hurt you and your fragile little psyche sitting at home on your fucking couch watching them on TV?
Yeah, rolling your stress ball.
Give me a break.
Come on now. What's the with your little spinner? What was those little things, those spinners?
What? The fidget spinners?
Yeah, with your fidget spinner.
Fidget spinner instead of watching a fucking basketball game.
Come on, Big Blue Nation. Don't be like that. Don't be like that. Root for your team, man. Come on, man. And so, I mean, like, we get it. We get, like, the Notre Dame is a bad loss. Yeah, it was hard. But we rooted for our team. That I mean, like, it wasn't like, I'm like, oh, my God, I'm done with it. Oh, my God. Right. The ass is falling out. Like, no, we're going to the next one. We keep rooting for my team, our team.
And I saw people saying, Cal said it's not about championships. That's not what he said. Right?
Right.
Because what he actually said was something to the fact, like, if I do right by these kids, it's about these kids before it's about the championships, right?
Right.
Because if you do right by the kids and those kids have success on the floor, everybody's going to have success, and that brings the championships.
Right. Some people don't get it. Some people will never get it.
Some people don't get it. You can't be hyper-focused on the end result and forget about everything leading up to that.
Right.
You've got to be more about your players than you've got to be about the end result at the end of a season in a random tournament. There were a lot more things going on this past weekend than a damn basketball game.
Right. And now we get to see our fine basketball team step up to the plate and try to help.
And I messaged people before that game. I said, I hope our fan base doesn't lose their shit.
Yeah.
If they happen to lose this game, because if you don't think what happened in the state had an effect on them, then you must just think they don't care about being in the state of Kentucky or being at the University of Kentucky.
Right.
Because it had to have obviously worn on them a little bit. So they weren't completely focused.
Right.
And I, for one, am glad that I have a coach and I have a team and I have an athletic department that are doing the things that the University of Kentucky is doing, raising money to help with what happened out in Western Kentucky. And it's not like this is the first time that our coach and our players have done this.
Right.
They did the same thing for Haiti after the earthquake. You had Coach Cal had his players washing kids' feet.
Yeah, the washing of the
feet. You know.
Yep.
And to help them understand that there's more to life than just sports.
Yeah.
You've got to be a leader not only on the floor, but more importantly, off the floor.
That does.
And the only way you learn that as a kid growing up is if you're out doing stuff like this.
Right. That builds chemistry and adds big things to the hard work.
Right.
Some people don't get that and probably never will. But I'm Jay Hayes and he is J.D. Hall. And this is The Dumbest Shit from Twitter this week. Oh, man. There's always going to be those people out there. But we'll move right along. We'll call them out, have some fun with it, and move it right along. Great episode. I'm looking forward to the matchup this weekend with Ohio State Saturday at 5 p.m. In Las Vegas. I think it'll be a good game. I think Kentucky will come away with it. I'm excited about it. Going to root for my team, and I'm going to have a crazy prediction, too. And when you see it, you're going to be like, oh, God. I'm going to have fun. I'm going to have fun with it as a fan. Like,
right, and that's what we do as fans. We right. have fun. We have to have fun with it, with sports.
I'll just say it's time for a severe willer.
If we don't have fun with it, then we end up like these miserable pricks on Twitter
right.
that think everything is terrible.
Right.
You know.
I will say it's time for Severe Willer to get his 17 assists in this game.
And you know, I told you before the season, and I think it was Robert Morris. He was close to that 17 assists, right? He had, 14 in that game?
Yep.
And they were 12 for 23 from three. So if our shooters
– 10 threes, baby. Slump, 10 threes.
And start hitting threes like we think that they can. Because the one thing about shooting, it's contagious.
Yeah, you're right.
Whether it's good or it's bad, right?
Yeah.
Because if you are out there as a shooter and your other dude who's a shooter and you guys are both just – it's clank, clank, clank. What happens after three or four misses? You're not loose and just letting it go free. You start to tighten up because you're like, oh, my God, if I miss another three, oh, my God, I can't miss this shot. I have to make this shot. So it works the same way as if everybody on the if your shooters start making. Because what happened in that Robert Morris game? Davion hit four threes. Grady hit four threes. They were shooting it confidently. I think Ty hit a couple of threes in that game. So they were shooting it with confidence, you know, and they were loose. And that's all. They weren't thinking about it.
Right.
But then you come out and you start out 0 for 9, 0 for 10, 0 for 11 as a team. Your next shot, you're like, oh, my God, I've got to make this. Like, there's nobody around. I've got to make this shot.
Pass.
Right. Right. Everything starts to tighten up, and you're not loose. You're not playing loose and free. And I think that's where we're at right now.
Yeah.
They just got to get out of that get out of their head and get back to just playing loose and playing free and not worrying about, oh, my God, if I miss this shot, what's going to happen?
Right.
Right. So once they get back to that, once they get to that point, because we really haven't seen it yet, you know, you look at the numbers, 7 for 18, 4 for 10, 3 for 16, 5 for 15, 6 for 25. It's gotten worse the last four games. But when you're at 32%, 33%, it's a lot easier to still be confident. But when you start hitting that 25%, 23%, 24% number, 19% or whatever we were, 21% in the Notre Dame game, when you start hitting that number, shit gets a little tighter. It starts to get a little bit more real.
Right.
So
we're going to be all right.
We're going to be okay.
But, yeah, great episode. And we'll have a special guest next week to talk about the Ohio State game. Tune in for that. I'm not going to let you know until next week.
if you saw Twitter, you might be able to guess who it is.
Right.
Maybe.
Right.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe. Maybe.
But anyway, Big Blue Nation, cheer your team on. Do it.
Yeah. Yes. Don't be miserable. And if you're going to be miserable watching a basketball game, whether it's Kentucky or anybody else, go do something else.
Right.
Go find something else that's going to bring joy into your life instead of watching something that's going to make you miserable.
Right. Well said. But anyway, have a great week. Go Big Blue. I'm your guy, Jay Hayes, and he is
J.D. Hall.
And we are Religiously Kentucky.
This was another episode of Religiously Kentucky.
It was great. Thanks for the hospitality.
If you liked this episode, make sure to give us a like and subscribe so you don't miss out on any future episodes and our opinionated take on the world of Kentucky sports. Religiously Kentucky.